The following is a real-life adventure of mine that's just a bit wordy to be called a personal essay. So I'm calling it narrative nonfiction. I was 21, living in Houston and appearing in a play called Fire, when director Robert Altman came to town to film Brewster McCloud, a now mostly forgotten movie that was now mostly forgotten actor Shelley Duvall's debut. Rumor had it Mr. Altman had plucked her from behind the cosmetics counter at Foley's department store. Well, I thought, why should he not pluck me as well? That afternoon, while my one-year-old daughter was down for her nap, I wrote a letter that began, "Dear Robert Altman, I would like to be your new star." There was more, but that was the gist of it. I put the letter in an envelope, along with my headshot, a few candids, some reviews. Once young Lizzie was awake, I loaded her onto the back of our bicycle and pedaled off to hand-deliver the envelope to the Warwick Hotel, where the director and his entourage were staying. I'd flown breathlessly into Houston 2 years before, worked as a waitress and a Houston Post researcher, made friends at coffee shops and peace rallies, married a Rice University student, had a child, decided I was an actor. In those days, I confused patience with entropy, and was driven by a burning urgency to be something before life, meaning my 20s, passed me by. What mattered most was that I not be afraid to try new things. I delivered the envelope to the Warwick concierge and pedaled away. The next day, again during nap time, the phone rang. It was Robert Altman inviting me to a party. I remember a frisson of panic. Maybe this particular trying of a new thing had been supposed to end with delivering the letter. "I'm in a show," I said, buying time, possibly hoping for a reprieve. "So am I," Mr. Altman said, "so we'll start early. Come around 6 before your theater call." The director's suite in the Warwick Hotel was smoky. People had said there were drugs, drugs, drugs everywhere around this man, but how was I to tell? Altman wasted no time in coming over, shaking my hand, looking me up and down. He asked if I'd like to come to Minnesota and make a movie. There it was, my brilliant career unfolding. Panic again. "But I have a child," I said. Altman was very kind. "So do I," he said. "Several. You have to choose what you want. Will you come to Minnesota and make a movie or stay here with your child? You may call me tomorrow with your decision." My brain felt hung on an electric fence. I'd only just steadied, sort of, after zooming out to Houston. What would happen if I zoomed off somewhere else? How would I be on a movie set, hanging out with artistic strangers who used drugs I didn't recognize? Of course, I didn't know enough yet to form this as an actual consideration, but I did know on some gut level that trying new things was quite scarily different from doing them. Fire, the play I was in, had been directed by an intense young man who tried and failed to kill himself early in the rehearsal period, supposedly moved to despair by a habit of falling in love with straight guys. The director, I've forgotten his name, had shot himself in the mouth, so he'd certainly meant to die, but he'd made the mistake of using a tiny gun that shot tiny bullets. His particular tiny bullet had lodged in the safe center of his brain, where I presume it still is. He'd come back to rehearsal a week later, apparently physically unscathed, much happier, talking about how hungry he was. He was quite pudgy by the time we'd opened. I had no idea how to behave around the director when he came back. To me, it seemed one thing to kill yourself for failing at love, another thing entirely to fail at killing yourself for failing at love. And yet here this man was, completely unashamed, laughing about his bullet, dispensing hugs. I couldn't quite look him in the eye. My problem was that I had no context for coping with such dazzling and generous resilience. No experience yet of my own colossal capacity to bounce off a bottom. I'd gotten by on luck and charm and looks rather than grit. There simply wasn't enough of me yet for grit, and I suspect one does need considerable grit on a movie set. So anyway, McCabe and Mrs. Miller was made without me. I called Altman the next day to say I wasn't going, even though such non-action nearly killed me. My mother used to say a special angel protected fools, drunkards, and her younger daughter. Certainly, as life went on, I was often to act the fool and most certainly became a drunkard. But here I still merrily am, so perhaps mother was right. Plenty of other people might have had enough grit at 21 to survive an Altman movie set intact, but I did not. I've never regretted staying put. Miss Lizzie, my daughter, has grown and flourished, as has my then husband, albeit with another wife. It took time, but I eventually evolved into a journalist and writer with enough grit to look anyone, anywhere, straight in the eye. A few years before his death, I interviewed Robert Altman. At the beginning of our conversation, I reminded him of Houston, my letter, his party, the offer he'd made me to go with him to Minnesota. As is right and proper in this sweet old world, Altman remembered none of it. Earlier version of this appeared in Two Hawks Quarterly.